Welcome back to Uprising. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. More than 6 months ago, the Senate Intelligence Committee released the executive summary of its investigation into CIA torture practices during the Bush presidency. The process of producing the report itself was highly controversial, with the CIA doing everything in its power to stymie the investigation, including spying on Senate members of the committee. The actual report itself remains classified, but there is now enough information in the public that questions are arising about why there has been no legal action taken. If the CIA has been documented as having tortured detainees captured during the so-called War on Terror in the report, then why has the Obama administration and its Justice Department not built on the Senate report? That question troubled human rights organizations so much that several of them signed on to a letter this week calling on Attorney General Loretta Lynch to conduct a truly independent investigation and push for accountability for what was done. Specifically, the letter, signed by Amnesty International, the ACLU, and Human Rights Watch, calls on Lynch to, quote, appoint a career prosecutor as a special prosecutor to review the report and to ensure that there is a comprehensive criminal investigation into the conduct documented by the Senate torture report, as well as the authorization for that conduct. The letter was also signed by 110,000 members of the U.S. public. Joining me now from Washington, D.C. is Ray McGovern, former CIA analyst, whose responsibilities included chairing National Intelligence Estimates. He's also the co-founder of Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity. Welcome to Uprising, Ray.
Thank you.
Now, the Senate Intelligence Committee's report was not the first time that there was an official inquiry into the CIA's torture, was it? There was an earlier inquiry in 2009 by Assistant U.S. Attorney John Durham, but apparently that was not a sufficient report?
Well, it wasn't sufficient. The problem here is that the President of the United States authorized torture. The Justice Department lawyers did a phony rationale for approving it, making it legal, and out of professional courtesy, or what do we say, honor among thieves, not honesty, you have the other lawyers in the Justice Department that came in with Obama doing the same thing. So we know, in short, that on February 7th, 2002, George Bush authorized torture by exempting the Taliban and Al-Qaeda from Geneva protections. Now, that's on record. What they call this memo, it's 1.5 pages, and it's available in PDF form on the web. What they call this was a humane treatment of Al-Qaeda and Taliban detainees. But the operative sentence was, we shall treat them humanely, comma, as appropriate, comma, and as consistent with military necessity, end quote. Well, hello, that's not what Geneva says. That's not what the statutes against torture in U.S. law say. That's not what the Convention Against Torture says. And so George Bush did this on the advice of Alberto Gonzalez, his White House lawyer at the time. And it's interesting because the week before, or actually a little bit more than that, on the 25th of January, Bush's memo was February 7th. Here I have an operative sentence or two from Gonzalez. Quote, Mr. President, it is difficult to predict the motives of prosecutors or independent counsels who might in the future decide to pursue unwarranted charges based on Section 2441. Your determination would create a reasonable basis in law that Geneva does not apply, which would provide a solid defense to any further prosecution. Well, if further proof were needed, when the Senate finished a five-year investigation into all of this, there's a subheader in their report, which was bipartisan, Chuck Hagel and Olympia Snowe having signed onto it. The Senate Armed Services Committee report said, Bush memo opened the door to torture.
Right.
So that's why they're reluctant to pursue it, because the highest people are involved.
Now, Ray, how important is the Senate committee report? If we only have access to the executive summary of that report, how useful has it been? And why would the Senate committee issue this report if they weren't going to act on it?
Well, there's a mixed blessing in issuing the report. You point out quite accurately that it's terrible not to act on it. But the terms of reference agreed to by the Republicans on the Senate Intelligence Committee, as well as the Democrats, was to pursue the question about what the CIA did and whether their claims that torture worked were accurate. Now, the only reason that the Republicans agreed to that was in the immediate wake of finding out that some 95 torture tapes showing waterboarding in Thailand had been destroyed against the admonitions of the White House counsel not to destroy them. So there was a fervor in sort of pursuing this, but as soon as it became clear that Dianne Feinstein had ordered her young staffers to do an honest job, the Republicans opted out. So now they can claim it was a partisan report, not a bipartisan report, but the reason is that they opted out. Now, Dianne Feinstein, to her credit, when she saw that the CIA had actually hacked the Senate committee's computers, and when George Tenet denied that and later had to confess and apologize, she was really in high dudgeon. She looked like a grandmother, right? She had these young people, and they had worked their rear ends off for 5 years. They came up with a credible report. She was going to make sure that eventuated and that came out before she left office. And she had some support from Wyden and from that fellow in Colorado, what's his name, Mark Udall, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, when Udall lost the election, he was free to do anything he wanted. He could have released the whole report. And using Udall's threat and her own insistence that this thing come to light, she went to the president and said, look, if I don't put this out, Udall's going to put it out. I don't know that for sure. That's my speculation. And the president said, oh, okay, why don't you put it out? But let John Brennan redact it to a fare-thee-well. Well, he did redact it, but it is so heinous in what remains that it makes it very easily would make one ashamed to be an American.
Well, Ray, I want to quote Amnesty International Executive Director Stephen Hawkins, who said, the Senate report contains disturbing and previously unknown details about torture, and yet the Justice Department is keeping it unread and unopened. It is effectively handing a get-out-of-jail-free card to all those responsible for torture. The message to every would-be torturer is that they will get away with it because the Justice Department will turn a blind eye. And that's, of course, that hits at the heart of why accountability is so important, because it can set a precedent to at least ensure that it'll be highly difficult, if not impossible, to repeat such crimes, right?
That's correct. That's exactly correct. And I would point out that there's an amendment now passed by the Senate at the House, the so-called Feinstein-McCain Amendment, which outlaws torture. Well, hello. Torture is already outlawed.
Right.
By statute, U.S. statute, by international treaty, by international law. So this strange amendment, in some bizarre way, gives sort of credibility so that it was okay before to torture people, and now it's sort of frowned upon. It's incredible. So, yes, this is a stain on our whole country, and the Justice Department will, you know, if you look at the last several characters we've had there, Ashcroft, Casey, Gonzalez, and no better, I insist, Eric Holder, who dug up a very curious legal theory to justify assassinating American citizens in violation of the Fifth Amendment. All these characters are you know, thugs in lawyers' robes. And we ought to recognize that, because unless we change that kind of thing, those people in the Justice Department who went after whistleblowers, who were going after Ed Snowden, who successfully prosecuted before an all-white jury the African-American case officer, Jeffrey Sterling, they are really poison. And the best vignette about that is when Tom Drake After 4 years, Thomas Drake was a whistleblower at the National Security Agency. After 4 years of persecution and prosecution by the Department of Justice, he was broke. He had a public defender. And when the case was just about to come to trial, the judge said, look, you Justice Department lawyers, don't you ever dare bring a case like this into my court again, based on not only flimsy evidence, but forged evidence. What they had done was seize some papers, retroactively stamped them secret, and said they found them in Tom Drake's house. So that's how bad they are. I don't know how you get rid of them, especially with this professional courtesy or whatever you call it, honor among thieves that exists in the Justice Department. But that's the case, and it's a really, really sorrowful time.
Well, Ray, let's talk about Loretta Lynch, because, of course, she is in power to do something about it. In this letter that was signed on to by human rights organizations and 110,000 others, is calling on her to take action. I mean, she seems to, just my initial impression, that she seems to not want to rock the boat very much, but she's taken a far greater interest in prosecuting FIFA officials in the world of international soccer for corruption and bribery than CIA officers for torture. Is that should we be looking at her priorities in that context?
Well, her priorities are set by the president.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, I have no evidence that she's ever been interested in soccer before, but clearly she was told to focus on that and avoid all these very sensitive issues. Right. You know, I have to say that the president of the United States, Barack Obama, has shown very little courage. I would say, rather than a profile in courage, he has a profile in cowardice. Colonel Davis, who is in charge of the prosecution in Gitmo, in Guantanamo, and wouldn't obey orders from these corrupt attorney generals and the corrupt lawyers in the Defense Department at the time, he quit. And he comments, and I think it's okay to say this on a program like this, he says, you know, I can't figure out Obama. I was so enthusiastic about him, but, you know, somewhere between the Capitol and the White House on Inauguration Day, Obama's testicles must have fallen off.
Oh, now, boy.
That's a terrible thing to say, but I think he's afraid, Sonali. I think Obama is very afraid. He has actually reportedly said to a close group of well-heeled fundraisers for him, look, you want me to be more progressive, but you're forgetting what happened to Dr. King. Mm. Now, if he said that, and if he feels that way, it really would have been far better, in my view, for him not to try to be president.
Wow. Well, Ray, I want to turn to the actual people who have been the victims of our torture. Recently, a detainee at Guantanamo. And of course, we forget that there's still men who are imprisoned there, many of them on a hunger strike. One of them, named Mo'ath al-Alwi, released a letter that was published in the press just recently. Al Jazeera Nation published it. He's from Yemen. He was captured by the U.S. in 2002. I mean, that's 13 years ago. He's been held at Guantanamo without charges. And he wrote the most incredible, moving letter that really should be a stain on American conscience. Here's a quote. He said, I hear the war in Afghanistan is over. This war was supposedly the reason I remained trapped, rotting in this endless horror at Guantanamo Bay. I write this letter today to ask, if this war has ended, why am I still here? Why has nothing changed? He, in his letter, describes how he's being force-fed in a very violent way as he's on hunger strike, which in and of itself is a form of torture, because that feeding could happen in a much more humane way. Have you seen this letter? Are we as Americans monsters to allow this to continue?
The monsters are in the White House and the Department of Justice. It's an incredible thing. I have been pointing out all year that this is the 800th anniversary of the Magna Carta. Now, those barons in England that faced down King John and forced him to accept habeas corpus, for example, which became, among other things in the charter, the basis for much US law and law abroad. So what should we do about the, should we instead of celebrating it, shall we have an inquest? Or maybe we should have an appropriate burial for the Magna Carta, because what's happened in this country, I'm really ashamed to say, has been a reverse of all the protections that were wrested at great peril from King John by those gutsy barons in England, and have been a big influence on Western law ever since, 800 years. So we're going to have a burial or a funeral or something. I suppose we should, to give it due respect.
In his letter, Mu'adh al-Alwi also made a really interesting observation, paying attention, I'm assuming, to the internal politics of the U.S. He wrote, "I realize that U.S. police officers get away with ruthlessly killing black people all the time. I wonder now if the U.S. follows any rule of law at all, the Geneva Conventions or even its own constitution. Where is the freedom and justice for all that it so proudly boasts to the world?" I mean, and that's, again, this issue of accountability. If the torture report by the Senate Intelligence Committee was acted upon, and if we, of course, freed all remaining prisoners like him and handsomely compensated him and others for destroying their lives, we would go a long way towards respecting the rule of law that we hold other countries to. I mean, I just imagine if this situation was happening in another country, the U.S. State Department would release some kind of scathing and judgmental report about how that country needs to respect the rule of law.
Well, yeah, that would be a mild response. We would probably drone kill whoever was responsible. Yeah, you know, this really goes to such basic things here. People say that America's original sin is racism. I think that's correct, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, we've seen it in this country, but do you think it would be as easy to torture people, to bomb the heck out of them, to drone kill them, if they looked more like most of us? I don't think so. Racism is at the bottom of that. Why do we call the Viet Cong, what do we call them, slopes, or we call them worse, or why do we call the dissidents in Iraq camel jockeys or towel heads? Well, it's to demonize them. It's to make them susceptible to torture or to drone killing or whatever. So this is really very basic. And unless we address this kind of attitude, unless we treat all people as being created equal, as Thomas Jefferson wrote in our Declaration of Independence, unless we get rid of this notion that we are, as the president keeps saying, the sole indispensable country in the world, what does that mean? Well, by definition, that means other countries are what? Dispensable, right? That means other peoples are dispensable. And so unless we get rid of this attitude, and I dare say that the religious institutional leaders in this country are very much amiss in missing the opportunity to tell people that there's a moral way to act and there's an immoral way to act. I often say that I try to follow Jesus Christ, and he was tortured to death. Well, I was upbraided by a humanist friend of mine who said, "Look, McGovern, it's really nice to know that you try to follow Jesus Christ, but I'm an unbeliever. And I know that human beings don't do those kinds of things to other human beings." So it reminds me of Kurt, my favorite quote. He was asked, "Well, what do you think of Jesus of Nazareth?" He said, "Well, I'm not sure he is God, but, you know, if it weren't for the Sermon on the Mount, I'd just as soon be a cockroach." All right? Well, I don't see that Jesus condoned torture in the Sermon on the Mount. As a matter of fact, he said something that's on my bumper sticker. I think when Jesus said, "Love your enemies," he probably meant not to torture them. Hmm. Hello?
Well, those are good words to end on. I want to thank you so much, Ray McGovern, for sharing your insight and your humor and your wisdom with us. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Sonali.
My guest, Ray McGovern, is a former CIA analyst whose responsibilities included chairing national intelligence estimates. He is a prominent anti-war activist and co-founder of the Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity. This is Uprising. We'll be right back after this break.